This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents Cruel Crown by Victoria Aveyard, performed by Andy Arndt, Jane Entwistle, and Amanda Dolan. Queen Song, read by Andy Arndt. As usual, Julian gave her a book. Just like the year before and the year before, and every holiday or occasion he could find in between his sister's birthdays. She had shelves of his so-called gifts, some given in truth, and some to simply clear space in the library he called a bedroom, where books were stacked so high and so precariously that even the cats had trouble navigating the labyrinthine piles. The subjects varied, from adventure tales of prairie raiders to stuffy poetry collections about the insipid royal court they both strived to avoid. Better for kindling, Corianne would say every time he left her another dull volume. Once, for her 12th birthday, Julian gave her an ancient text written in a language she could not read, and one she assumed he only pretended to understand. Despite her dislike for the majority of his stories, she kept her own growing collection on neat shelves, strictly alphabetized, their spines facing forward to display titles on leather bindings. Most would go untouched, unopened, unread, a tragedy even Julian could not find the words to bemoan. There is nothing so terrible as a story untold. But Corianne kept them all the same, well-dusted, polished, their gold-stamped letters gleaming in the hazy light of summer or winter's gray castings. "From Julian" was scrawled in each one, and those words she treasured above almost all. Only his true gifts were loved more, the manuals and guides sheathed in plastic, tucked between the pages of a genealogy or encyclopedia. A few held court at her bedside, snug beneath her mattress, to be pulled out at night when she could devour technical schematics and machine studies, how to build, break down, and maintain transport engines, air jets, telegraphy equipment, even light bulbs and kitchen stoves. Her father did not approve, as was the usual way. A silver daughter of a noble high house should not have fingers stained in motor oil, nails chipped by borrowed tools, or bloodshot eyes from too many nights spent straining over unsuitable literature. But Harris Jacobs forgot his misgivings every time the video screen in the estate parlor shorted out, hissing sparks and blurred transmissions. "Fix it, Corey, fix it!" She did as he commanded, hoping each time would be the one to convince him, only to have her tinkering sneered at a few days later, and all her good work forgotten. She was glad he was gone, away in the capital aiding their uncle, the lord of House Jacobs. This way she could spend her birthday with the people she loved, namely her brother Julian and Sarah Skonos, who had come specifically for the occasion. Growing prettier by the day, Corianne thought, noting her dearest friend. It had been months since their last meeting, when Sarah turned 15 and moved permanently to the royal court. Not so long, really, but already the girl seemed different, sharper. Her cheekbones cut cruelly beneath skin somehow paler than before, as if drained. And her gray eyes, once bright stars, seemed dark, full of shadows. But her smile came easily, as it always did around the Jacobs children. Around Julian, truly, Corianne knew. And her brother was just the same, grinning broadly, keeping a distance no uninterested boy would think to keep. He was surgically aware of his movements, and Corianne was surgically aware of her brother. At 17, he was not too young for proposals, and she suspected there would be one in the coming months. Julian had not bothered to wrap her gift. It was already beautiful on its own, leather-bound, striped in the dusty yellow golds of House Jacobs, with the burning crown of Norda embossed into the cover. There was no title on the face or spine, and Corianne could tell there was no hidden guidebook in its pages. She scowled a little. "Open it, Corey," Julian said, stopping her before she could toss the book onto the meager pile of other presents, all of them veiled insults, gloves to hide common hands, impractical dresses for a court she refused to visit, and an already opened box of sweets her father didn't want her to eat. They would be gone by dinner time. Corianne did as instructed and opened the book to find it empty. Its cream pages were blank. She wrinkled her nose, not bothering to put on the show of a grateful sister. Julian required no such lies and would see through them anyway. What's more, there was no one here to scold her for such behavior. Mother is dead, father gone, and Cousin Jessamine is blissfully still asleep. Only Julian, Corianne, and Sarah sat alone in the garden parlor, three beads rattling around the dusty jar of the Jacobs estate. It was a yawning room that matched the ever-present hollow ache in Corianne's chest. Arched windows overlooked a tangled grove of once orderly roses that had not seen the hands of a green warden in a decade. The floor needed a good sweeping, and the gold draperies were gray with dust, and most likely spiderwebs as well. Even the painting over the soot-stained marble fireplace was missing its gilt frame, sold off long ago. The man who stared out from the naked canvas was Corianne and Julian's own grandfather, Janus Jacobs, who would certainly despair of his family's state. Poor nobles, trading on an old name and traditions, making do with little and less every year. Julian laughed, making the usual sound. Fond exasperation, Corianne knew. It was the best way to describe his attitude toward his younger sister. 2 years his junior, and always quick to remind her of his superior age and intellect. Gently, of course, as if that made any difference. "It's for you to write in," he pressed on, sliding long, thin fingers over the pages. "Your thoughts, what you do with your days." "I know what a diary is," she replied, snapping the book shut. He didn't mind, not bothering to be offended. Julian knew her better than anyone. "Even when I get the words wrong. And my days don't warrant much of a record."
"Nonsense. You're quite interesting when you try."
Corianne grinned.
"Julian, your jokes are improving. Have you finally found a book to teach you humor?"
Her eyes flickered to Sarah.
"Or someone?"
While Julian flushed, his cheeks bluing with silver blood, Sarah took it in stride.
"I'm a healer, not a miracle worker," she said, her voice a melody.
Their joined laughter echoed, filling the emptiness of the estate house for one kind moment. In the corner, the old clock chimed, tolling the hour of Corianne's doom. Namely, Cousin Jessamine, who would arrive at any moment. Julian was quick to stand, stretching a lanky form transitioning into manhood. He still had growing to do, both up and out. Corianne, on the other hand, had been the same height for years and showed no sign of changing. She was ordinary in everything, from almost colorless blue eyes to limp chestnut hair that stubbornly refused to grow much farther than her shoulders.
"You didn't want these, did you?"
he said as he reached across his sister. He snatched a few sugar-glassed candies from the box, earning a swat in reply.
"Etiquette be damned, those are mine."
"Careful," he warned. "I'll tell Jessamine."
"No need," came their elderly cousin's reedy whistle of a voice, echoing from the columned entrance to the parlor.
With a hiss of annoyance, Corianne shut her eyes, trying to will Jessamine Jacobs out of existence. No use in that, of course. I'm not a whisper, just a singer. And though she could have tried to use her meager abilities on Jessamine, it would only end poorly. Old as Jessamine was, her voice and ability were still whip-sharp, far quicker than her own. I'll end up scrubbing floors with a smile if I try her. Corianne pasted on a polite expression and turned to find her cousin leaning upon a bejeweled cane, one of the last beautiful things in their house. Of course, it belonged to the foulest. Jessamine had long ago stopped frequenting silver skin healers, to age gracefully, as she put it. Though, in truth, the family could no longer afford such treatments from the most talented of House Skonos,
or even the skin healer apprentices of common, lesser birth. Her skin sagged now, gray in pallor, with purple age spots across her wrinkled hands and neck. Today she wore a lemon silk wrap around her head to hide thinning white hair that barely covered her scalp, and a flowing dress to match. The moth-eaten edges were well hidden, though. Jessamine excelled at illusion.
"Be a dear and take those to the kitchen, Julian, won't you?" she said, jabbing a long-nailed finger at the candies. "The staff will be so grateful."
It took all Corianne's strength not to scoff. The staff was little more than a red butler more ancient than Jessamine, who didn't even have teeth, as well as the cook and two young maids, who were somehow expected to maintain the entire estate. They might enjoy the candies, but of course Jessamine had no true intention of letting them. They'll end up at the bottom of the trash, or tucked away in her own room, more like. Julian felt quite the same, judging by his twisted expression. But arguing with Jessamine was as fruitless as the trees in the corrupted old orchard.
"Of course, cousin," he said with a voice better suited to a funeral.
His eyes were apologetic, while Corianne's were resentful. She watched with a thinly veiled sneer as Julian offered one arm to Sarah, the other scooping up her unsuitable gift. Both were eager to escape Jessamine's domain, but loath to leave Corianne behind. Still, they did it, sweeping away from the parlor.
"That's right. Leave me here. You always do."
Abandoned to Jessamine, who had taken it upon herself to turn Corianne into a proper daughter of House Jacus, put simply, silent. And always left to their father, when he returned from court, from long days waiting for Uncle Jared to die. The head of House Jacus, governor of the Adirondack region, had no children of his own, and so his titles would pass to his brother, and then Julian after him. At least he had no children any more. The twins, Jenna and Caspian, were killed in the Lakelander War, leaving their father without an heir of his flesh, not to mention the will to live. It was only a matter of time before Corianne's father took up the ancestral seat, and he wanted to waste no time doing so. Corianne found the behavior perverse at best. She couldn't imagine doing such a thing to Julian, no matter how angry he made her. To stand by and watch him waste away with grief, it was an ugly, loveless act, and the thought of it turned her stomach. "But I have no desire to lead our family, and father is a man of ambition, if not tact." What he planned to do with his eventual rise, she did not know. House Jacos was small, unimportant. Governors of a backwater with little more than the blood of a high house to keep them warm at night. And, of course, Jessamine, to make sure everyone pretended like they weren't drowning. She took a seat with the grace of one half her age, knocking her cane against the dirty floor.
"Preposterous," she muttered,
striking at a haze of dust motes swirling in a beam of sunlight.
"So hard to find good help these days."
"Especially when you can't pay them," Corianne sneered in her head. "Indeed, cousin, so difficult."
"Well, hand them over. Let's see what Jared sent along," she said.
One clawed hand reached out, flapping open and closed in a gesture that made Corianne's skin crawl. She bit her lip between her teeth, chewing it to keep from saying the wrong thing. Instead, she lifted the two dresses that were her uncle's gifts and laid them upon the sofa where Jessamine perched. Sniffing, Jessamine examined them as Julian did his ancient texts. She squinted at the stitching and lacework, rubbing the fabric, pulling at invisible stray threads in both golden dresses.
"Suitable," she said after a long moment. "If not outdated. None of these are the latest fashions."
"What a surprise," Corianne could not help but drawl. Thwack. The cane hit the floor.
"No sarcasm. It's unbecoming of a lady."
"Well, every lady I've met seems well versed in it, yourself included, if I can even call you a lady." In truth, Jessamine had not been to the royal court in at least a decade. She had no idea what the latest fashions were, and when she was deep in the gin, could not even remember which king was on the throne.
Tiberius the sixth? Fifth? No, it's the fourth still, certainly. The old flame just won't die.
And Corianne would gently remind her that they were ruled by Tiberius the fifth. His son, the crown prince, would be Tiberius the sixth when his father died. Though with his reputed taste for warfare, Corianne wondered if the prince would live long enough to wear a crown. The history of Norda was fraught with Kalor firebrands dying in battle, mostly second princes and cousins. She quietly wished the prince dead, if only to see what would happen. He had no siblings that she knew of, and the Kalor cousins were few, not to mention weak, if Jessamine's lessons could be trusted. Norda had fought Lakelanders for a century, but another war within was certainly on the horizon. Between the high houses, to put another family on the throne. Not that House Jacobs would be involved at all. Their insignificance was a constant, just like Cousin Jessamine.
"Well, if your father's communications are to be believed, these dresses should be of use soon enough," Jessamine carried on as she set the presents down.
Unconcerned with the hour or Corianne's presence, she drew a glass bottle of gin from her gown and took a hearty sip. The scent of juniper bit the air. Frowning, Corianne looked up from her hands, now busy wringing the new gloves.
"Is Uncle unwell?"
Thwack.
"What a stupid question! He's been unwell for years, as you know."
Her face burned silver with a florid blush.
"I mean, worse. Is he worse?"
"Harris thinks so. Jared has taken to his chambers at court, and rarely attends social banquets, let alone his administrative meetings or the governor's council. Your father stands in for him more and more these days. Not to mention the fact that your uncle seems determined to drink away the coffers of House Jacobs." Another swig of gin. Corianne almost laughed at the irony.
"How selfish!"
"Yes, selfish," the young girl muttered. "You haven't wished me a happy birthday, cousin." But she did not press on that subject. It hurts to be called ungrateful, even by a leech.
"Another book from Julian, I see. Oh, and gloves. Wonderful. Harris took my suggestion. And Skonos, what did she bring you?"
"Nothing. Yet." Sarah had told her to wait, that her gift wasn't something to be piled with the others.
"No gift? Yet she sits here, eating our food, taking up space."
Corianne did her best to let Jessamine's words float over her and away, like clouds in a wind-blown sky. Instead, she focused on the manual she read last night. "Batteries, cathodes and anodes, primary use are discarded. Secondary can be recharged."
Thwack.
"Yes, Jessamine?" A very bug-eyed old woman stared back at Corianne, her annoyance written in every wrinkle.
"I don't do this for my benefit, Corianne."
"Well, it certainly isn't for mine," she couldn't help but hiss. Jessamine crowed in response, her laugh so brittle she might spit dust.
"You'd like that, wouldn't you? To think that I sit here with you, suffering your scowls and bitterness for fun? Think less of yourself, Corianne. I do this for no one but House Jacobs, for all of us. I know what we are better than you do. And I remember what we were before, when we lived at court, negotiated treaties, were as indispensable to the Kalor kings as their own flame. I remember. There is no greater pain or punishment than memory."
She turned her cane over in her hand, one finger counting the jewels she polished every night, sapphires, rubies, emeralds, and a single diamond, given by suitors or friends or family, Corianne did not know. But they were Jessamine's treasure, and her eyes glittered like the gems.
"Your father will be lord of House Jacobs, and your brother after him.
That leaves you in need of a lord of your own, lest you wish to stay here forever?
Like you. The implication was clear, and somehow Corianne found she could not speak around the sudden lump in her throat. She could only shake her head. No, Jessamine, I do not want to stay here. I don't want to be you.
Very good, Jessamine said.
Her cane thwacked once more.
Let's begin for the day.
Later that evening, Corianne sat down to write. Her pen flew across the pages of Julian's gift, spilling ink as a knife would blood. She wrote of everything. Jessamine, her father, Julian, the sinking feeling that her brother would abandon her to navigate the coming hurricane alone. He had Sarah now. She'd caught them kissing before dinner, and while she smiled, pretending to laugh, pretending to be pleased by their flushes and stuttered explanations, Corianne quietly despaired. Sarah was my best friend. Sarah was the only thing that belonged to me. But no longer. Just like Julian, Sarah would drift away, until Corianne was left with only the dust of a forgotten home and a forgotten life. Because no matter what Jessamine said, how she preened and lied about Corianne's so-called prospects, there was nothing to be done.
No one will marry me. At least no one I want to marry.
She despaired of it, and accepted it in the same turn.
I will never leave this place, she wrote. These golden walls will be my tomb.
Jared Jacos received two funerals. The first was at court in Archaon, on a spring day hazy with rain. The second would be a week after, at the estate in Adirondack. His body would join the family tomb and rest in a marble sepulchre paid for with one of the jewels from Jessamine's cane. The emerald had been sold off to a gem merchant in East Archaon, while Corianne, Julian, and their aged cousin looked on. Jessamine seemed detached, not bothering to watch as the green stone passed from the new Lord Jacos's hand to the silver jeweler. A common man, Corianne knew. He wore no house colors to speak of, but he was richer than they were, with fine clothes and a good amount of jewelry all over.
We might be noble, but this man could buy us all if he wanted.
The family wore black, as was custom. Corianne had to borrow a gown for the occasion, one of Jessamine's many horrid mourning frocks, for Jessamine had attended and overseen more than a dozen funerals of House Jacos. The young girl itched in the get-up, but kept still as they left the merchant quarter, heading for the great bridge that spanned the capital river, connecting both sides of the city.
Jessamine would scold or hit me if I started scratching.
It was not Corianne's first visit to the capital, or even her tenth. She'd been there many times, usually at her uncle's bidding, to show the so-called strength of House Jacos. A foolish notion. Not only were they poor, but their family was small, wasting, especially with the twins gone. No match to the sprawling family trees of houses Erol, Samos, Rhombos, and more. Rich bloodlines that could support the immense weight of their many relations. Their place as high houses was firmly cemented in the hierarchy of both nobility and government. Not so with Jacos, if Corianne's father, Harris, could not find a way to prove his worth to his peers and his king. For her part, Corianne saw no way through it. Adirondack was on the Lakelander border, a land of few people and deep forest no one needed to log. They could not claim mines or mills or even fertile farmland. There was nothing of use in their corner of the world. She had tied a golden sash around her waist, cinching in the ill-fitting, high-collared dress in an attempt to look a bit more presentable, if not in fashion. Corianne told herself she didn't mind the whispers of court, the sneers from the other young ladies who watched her like she was a bug, or worse, a red. They were all cruel girls, silly girls, waiting with bated breath for any news of Queen's trial. But of course that wasn't true. Sarah was one of them, wasn't she? A daughter of Lord Skonos, training to be a healer, showing great promise in her abilities. Enough to service the royal family if she kept to the path.
I desire no such thing, Sarah said once, confiding in Corianne months before, during a visit. It will be a waste if I spend my life healing paper cuts and crow's feet. My skills would be of better use in trenches of the Choke or the hospitals of Corvium. Soldiers die there every day, you know. Reds and Silvers both, killed by Lakelander bombs and bullets, bleeding to death because people like me stay here.
She would never say so to anyone else, least of all her Lord Father. Such words were better suited to midnight, when two girls could whisper their dreams without fear of consequence.
I want to build things, Corianne told her best friend on such an occasion.
Build what, Corianne?
Air jets, airships, transports, video screens, ovens. I don't know, Sarah. I don't know. I just want to make something.
Sarah smiled then, her teeth glinting in a slim beam of moonlight.
Make something of yourself, you mean? Don't you, Corey?
I didn't say that.
You didn't have to.
I can see why Julian likes you so much. That quieted Sarah right away, and she was asleep soon after. But Corianne kept her eyes open, watching shadows on the walls, wondering. Now, on the bridge, in the middle of brightly colored chaos, she did the same. Nobles, citizens, merchants seemed to float before her, their skin cold, pace slow, eyes hard and dark no matter their color. They drank in the morning with greed, a quenched man still gulping at water while others died of thirst. The others were the Reds, of course, wearing the bands that marked them. The servants among them wore uniforms, some striped with the colors of the high house they served. Their movements were determined, their eyes forward, hurrying along on their errands and orders. They have purpose, at least, Corianne thought. Not like me. She suddenly felt the urge to grab onto the nearby lamppost, to wrap her arms around it lest she be carried away like a leaf on the wind, or a stone dropping through water, flying or drowning or both, going where some other force willed, beyond her own control. Julian's hand closed around her wrist, forcing her to take his arm. He'll do, she thought, and a cord of tension relaxed in her. Julian will keep me here. Later on, she recorded little of the official funeral in her diary, long spattered with ink splotches and crossouts. Her spelling was improving, though, as was her penmanship. She wrote nothing of Uncle Jared's body, his skin whiter than the moon, drained of blood by the embalming process. She did not record how her father's lip quivered, betraying the pain he truly felt for his brother's death. Her writings were not of the way the rain stopped, just long enough for the ceremony, or the crowd of lords who came to pay their respects. She did not even bother to mention the king's presence, or that of his son Tiberius, who brooded with dark brows and an even darker expression.
"Uncle is gone," she wrote instead of all this. "And somehow, in some way, I envy him."
As always, she tucked the diary away when she was finished, hiding it beneath the mattress of her bedchamber with the rest of her treasures. Namely, a little pallet of tools, jealously guarded, taken from the abandoned gardener's shed back home. Two screwdrivers, a delicate hammer, one set of needle-nose pliers, and a wrench rusted almost beyond use. Almost. There was a coil of spindly wire as well, carefully drawn from an ancient lamp in the corner that no one would miss. Like the estate, the Jacos townhouse in West Archeon was a decaying place, and damp, too, in the middle of the rainstorm, giving the old walls the feel of a dripping cave. She was still wearing her black dress and gold sash, with what she told herself were raindrops clinging to her lashes, when Jessamine burst through the door. To fuss, of course. There was no such thing as a banquet without a twittering Jessamine, let alone one at court. She did her best to make Corianne as presentable as possible with the meager time and means available. As if her life depended upon it. Perhaps it does. Whatever life she holds dear. Perhaps the court is in need of another etiquette instructor for the noble children, and she thinks performing miracles with me will win her the position. Even Jessamine wants to leave.
"There now, none of this," Jessamine muttered, swiping at Corianne's tears with a tissue. Another swipe, this time with a chalky black pencil, to make her eyes stand out. Purple-blue rouge along her cheeks, giving her the illusion of bone structure. Nothing on the lips, for Corianne had never mastered the art of not getting lipstick on her teeth or water glass.
"I suppose it will do."
"Yes, Jessamine." As much as the old woman delighted in obedience, Corianne's manner gave her pause. The girl was sad, clearly, in the wake of the funeral.
"What's the matter, child? Is it the dress?"
"I don't care about faded black silks or banquets or this vile court. I don't care about any of it."
"Nothing at all, cousin. Just hungry, I suppose."
Corianne reached for the easy escape, throwing one flaw to Jessamine to hide another.
"Mercy upon your appetite," she replied, rolling her eyes. "Remember, you must eat daintily like a bird. There should always be food on your plate. Pick, pick, pick."
Pick, pick, pick. The words felt like sharp nails drumming on Corianne's skull, but she forced a smile all the same. It bit at the corners of her mouth, hurting just as much as the words and the rain and the falling sensation that had followed her since the bridge. Downstairs, Julian and their father were already waiting, huddled close to a smoky fire in the hearth. Their suits were identical, black with pale golden sashes across their chests from shoulder to hip. Lord Jacos tentatively touched the newly acquired pin stuck in his sash, a beaten gold square as old as his house. Nothing compared to the gems, medallions, and badges of the other governors, but enough for this moment. Julian caught Corianne's eye, beginning to wink for her benefit, but her downcast air stopped him cold. He kept close to her all the way to the banquet, holding her hand in the rented transport, and then her arm as they crossed through the great gates of Caesar's Square. Whitefire Palace, their destination, sprawled to their left, dominating the south side of the tiled square now busy with nobles. Jessamine buzzed with excitement, despite her age, and made sure to smile and nod at everyone who passed. She even waved, letting the flowing sleeves of her black and gold gown glide through the air. Communicating with clothes, Corianne knew. How utterly stupid. Just like the rest of this dance that will end with the further disgrace and downfall of House Jacos. Why delay the inevitable? Why play at a game we can't hope to compete in? She could not fathom it. Her brain knew circuitry better than high society, and despaired at ever understanding the latter. There was no reason to the court of Norda, or even her own family, even Julian. "I know what you asked of father," she muttered, careful to keep her chin tucked against his shoulder. His jacket muffled her voice, but not enough for him to claim he couldn't hear her. His muscles tightened beneath her.
"Corey,
I must admit I don't quite understand. I thought..." Her voice caught. "I thought you would want to be with Sarah, now that we'll have to move to court."
"You asked to go to Delphi, to work with the scholars and excavate ruins rather than learn lordship at father's right hand. Why would you do that? Why, Julian? And the worst question of all, the one she didn't have the strength to ask, how could you leave me too?" Her brother heaved a long sigh and tightened his grip.
"I did. I do. But..."
"But? Has something happened?"
"No, nothing at all. Good or bad," he added, and she could hear the hint of a smile in his voice. "I just know she won't leave court if I'm here with father. I can't do that to her. This place. I won't trap her here in this pit of snakes."
Corianne felt a pang of sorrow for her brother and his noble, selfless, stupid heart.
"You'd let her go to the front, then?"
"There's no let where I'm concerned. She should be able to make her own decisions."
"And if her father, Lord Skonos, disagrees?"
"As he surely will."
"Then I'll marry her as planned and bring her to Delphi with me."
"Always a plan with you."
"I certainly try."
Despite the swell of happiness, her brother and best friend married,
The familiar ache tugged at Corianne's insides. They'll be together, and you left alone. Julian's fingers squeezed her own suddenly, warm despite the misting rain.
And of course, I'll send for you as well.
You think I'd leave you to face the royal court with no one but Father and Jessamine? Then he kissed her cheek and winked.
Think a bit better of me, Corey.
For his sake, she forced a wide, white grin that flashed in the lights of the palace. She felt none of its gleam. How can Julian be so smart and so stupid at the same time? It puzzled and saddened her in succession. Even if their father agreed to let Julian go to study in Delphi, Corianne would never be allowed to do the same. She was no great intellect, charmer, beauty, or warrior. Her usefulness lay in marriage, in alliance, and there were none to be found in her brother's books or protection. Whitefire was done up in the colors of House Calore, black and red and royal silver from every alabaster column. The windows winked with inner light, and sounds of roaring party filtered from the grand entrance, manned by the king's own sentinel guards in their flaming robes and masks. As she passed them, still clutching Julian's hand, Corianne felt less like a lady, and more like a prisoner being led into her cell. Corianne did her best to pick at her meal. She also debated pocketing a few gold inlaid forks. If only House Miranda's did not face them across the table. They were whispers, all of them, mind readers who probably knew Corianne's intentions as well as she did. Sarah told her she should be able to feel it, to notice if one of them poked into her head, and she kept rigid, on edge, trying to be mindful of her own brain. It made her silent and white-faced, staring intensely at her plate of pulled-apart and uneaten food. Julian tried to distract, as did Jessamine, though she did so unintentionally, all but falling over herself to compliment Lord and Lady Mirandis on everything from their matching outfits, a suit for the Lord and gown for the Lady, both shimmering like a blue-black sky of stars, to the prophets of their ancestral lands, mostly in Haven, including the techie slum of Marytown, a place Corianne knew was hardly Mary. The Mirandis brood seemed intent on ignoring House Jacobs as best they could, keeping their attentions on themselves and the raised banquet table where the royals ate. Corianne could not help but steal a glance at them as well. Tiberius V, King of Norda, was in the center, naturally, sitting tall and lean in his ornate chair. His black dress uniform was slashed with crimson silk and silver braid, all meticulously perfect and in place. He was a beautiful man, more than handsome, with eyes of liquid gold and cheekbones to make poets weep. Even his beard, regally speckled with gray, was neatly razored to an edged perfection. According to Jessamine, his queen's trial was a bloodbath of warring ladies vying to be his queen. None seemed to mind that the king would never love them. They only wanted to mother his children, keep his confidence, and earn a crown of their own. Queen Annabel, an oblivion of House Larillon, did just that. She sat on the king's left, her smile curling, eyes on her only son. Her military uniform was open at the neck, revealing a firestorm of jewels at her throat, red and orange and yellow as the explosive ability she possessed. Her crown was small but difficult to ignore, black gems that winked every time she moved, set into a thick band of rose gold. The king's paramour wore a similar band on his head, though the gemstones were absent from this crown. He didn't seem to mind, his smile fiercely bright while his fingers intertwined with the king's. Prince Robert of House Eyrell. He had not a drop of royal blood, but held the title for decades at the king's orders. Like the queen, he wore a riot of gems, blue and red in his house colors, made more striking by his black dress uniform, long ebony hair, and flawless bronze skin. His laugh was musical, and it carried over the many voices echoing through the banquet hall. Corianne thought he had a kind look, a strange thing for one so long at court. It comforted her a little, until she noticed his own house seated next to him, all of them sharp and stern, with darting eyes and feral smiles. She tried to remember their names, but knew only one. His sister, Lady Era, the head of House Eril, seeming it in every inch. As if she sensed her gaze, Era's dark eyes flashed to Corianne's, and she had to look elsewhere. To the prince. Tiberius the Sixth one day, but only Tiberius now. A teenager, Julian's age, with the shadow of his father's beard splotched unevenly across his jaw. He favored wine, judging by the empty glass hastily being refilled and the silver blush blooming across his cheeks. She remembered him at her uncle's funeral, a dutiful son standing stoic by a grave. Now he grinned easily, trading jokes with his mother. His eyes caught hers for a moment, glancing over Queen Annabelle's shoulder to lock onto the Jacos girl in an old dress. He nodded quickly, acknowledging her stare, before returning to his antics and his wine.
"I can't believe she allows it," said a voice across the table.
Corianne turned to find Alara Mirandus also staring at the royals, her keen and angled eyes narrowed in distaste. Like her parents, Alara's outfit sparkled, dark blue silk and studded white gems, though she wore a wrapped blouse with slashed cape sleeves instead of a gown. Her hair was long, violently straight, falling in an ash curtain of blonde over one shoulder, revealing an ear studded with crystal brilliance. The rest of her was just as meticulously perfect. Long dark lashes, skin more pale and flawless than porcelain, with the grace of something polished and pruned into court perfection. Already self-conscious, Corianne tugged at the golden sash around her waist. She wished nothing more than to walk out of the hall and all the way back to the townhouse.
"I'm speaking to you, Jacos."
"Forgive me if I'm surprised," Corianne replied, doing her best to keep her voice even. Alara was not known for her kindness, or much else for that matter. Despite being the daughter of a ruling lord, Corianne realized she knew little of the Whisper Girl.
"What are you talking about?"
Alara rolled bright blue eyes with the grace of a swan.
"The queen, of course. I don't know how she stands to share a table with her husband's whore, much less his family. It's an insult, plain as day."
Again, Corianne glanced at Prince Robert. His presence seemed to soothe the king, and if the queen truly minded, she didn't show it. As she watched, all three crowned royals were whispering together in gentle conversation, but the crown prince and his wine glass were gone.
"I wouldn't allow it," Alara continued, pushing her plate away.
It was empty, eaten clean. At least she has spine enough to eat her food.
"And it would be my house sitting up there, not his. It's the queen's right and no one else's."
"So she'll be competing in queen's trial, then?"
"Of course I will."
Fear snapped through Corianne, chilling her. "Did she?"
"Yes."
A wicked smile spread across Alara's face. It burned something in Corianne, and she nearly fell back in shock. She felt nothing, not even a brush inside her head, no indication that Alara was listening to her thoughts. She sputtered. "Excuse me." Her legs felt foreign as she stood, wobbly from sitting through 13 courses, but still under her own power, thankfully. Blank, 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 she thought, picturing white walls and white paper and white nothing in her head. Alara only watched, giggling into her hand.
"Corey,"
she heard Julian say, but he didn't stop her. Neither did Jessamine, who would not want to cause a scene. And her father didn't notice at all, more engrossed in something Lord Provost was saying. Blank, 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 blank. Her footsteps were even, not too fast or too slow. How far away must I be?
"Farther,"
said Alara's sneering purr in her head. She nearly tripped over at the sensation. The voice echoed in everything around and in her, windows to bone, from the chandeliers overhead to the blood pounding in her ears. "Farther, Jacos."
blank, 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 blank. She did not realize she was whispering the words to herself, fervent as a prayer, until she was out of the banquet hall, down a passage, and through an etched glass door. A tiny courtyard rose around her, smelling of rain and sweet flowers. Blank, 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 she mumbled once more, moving deeper into the garden. Magnolia trees twisted in an arch, forming a crown of white blossoms and rich green leaves. It was barely raining anymore, and she moved closer to the trees for shelter from the final drippings of the storm. It was chillier than she expected, but Corianne welcomed it. Alara echoed no longer. Sighing, she sank down onto a stone bench beneath the grove. Its touch was colder still, and she wrapped her arms around herself.
"I can help with that,"
said a deep voice, the words slow and plodding. Corianne whirled, wide-eyed. She expected Alara haunting her, or Julian, or Jessamine to scold her abrupt exit. The figure standing a few feet away was clearly not any of them. "Your Highness," Corianne said, jumping to her feet so she could bow properly. The Crown Prince Tiberius stood over her, pleasant in the darkness, a glass in one hand and a half-empty bottle in the other. He let her go through the motions and kindly said nothing of her poor form.
"That'll do,"
he finally said, motioning for her to stand. She did as commanded with all haste, straightening up to face him. "Yes, Your Highness."
"Would you care for a glass, my lady?"
he said, though he was already filling the cup. No one was foolish enough to refuse an offer from a prince of Norta.
"It's not a coat, but it will warm you well enough. Pity there's no whiskey at these functions."
Corianne forced a nod. "Pity, yes," she echoed, never having tasted the bite of brown liquor. With shaking hands, she took the full glass, her fingers brushing his for a moment. His skin was warm as a stone in the sun, and she was struck by the need to hold his hand. Instead, she drank deep of the red wine. He matched her, albeit sipping straight from the bottle. How crude, she thought, watching his throat bob as he swallowed. Jessamine would skin me if I did that. The prince did not sit next to her, but maintained his distance, so that she could only feel the ghost of his warmth. Enough to know his blood ran hot, even in the damp. She wondered how he managed to wear a trim suit without sweating right through it. Part of her wished he would sit, only so she could enjoy the second-hand heat of his abilities, but that would be improper on both their parts.
"You are the niece of Jared Jacobs, yes?"
His tone was polite, well-trained. An etiquette coach probably followed him since birth. Again, he did not wait for an answer to his question.
"My condolences, of course."
"Thank you. My name is Corianne," she offered, realizing he would not ask. He only asks what he already knows the answer to. He dipped his head in acknowledgment.
"Yes, and I won't make fools of us both by introducing myself."
In spite of propriety, Corianne felt herself smile. She sipped at the wine again, not knowing what else to do. Jessamine had not given her much instruction on conversing with royals of House Kalor, let alone the future king. Speak when spoken to was all she could recall, so she kept her lips pressed together so tightly they formed a thin line. Tiberius laughed openly at the sight. He was maybe a little drunk and entirely amused.
"Do you know how annoying it is to have to lead every single conversation?"
he chuckled.
"I talk to Robert and my parents more than anyone else, simply because it's easier than extracting words from other people."
"How wretched for you," she snapped in her head. "That sounds awful," she said as demurely as she could. "Perhaps when you're king, you can make some changes to the etiquette of court?"
"Sounds exhausting,"
he muttered back around swigs of wine.
"And unimportant in the scheme of things. There's a war on, in case you haven't noticed."
He was right. The wine did warm her a bit.
"A war?" she said. "Where? When? I've heard nothing of this."
The prince whipped to face her quickly, only to find Corianne smirking a little at his reaction. He laughed again and tipped the bottle at her.
"You had me for a second there, Lady Jacobs."
Still grinning, he moved to the bench, sitting next to her. Not close enough to touch, but Corianne still went stock still, her playful edge forgotten. He pretended not to notice. She tried her best to remain calm and poised.
"So I'm out here drinking in the rain because my parents frown upon being intoxicated in front of the court."
The heat of him flared, pulsing with his inner annoyance. Corianne reveled in the sensation as the cold was chased from her bones.
"What's your excuse?" "No, wait, let me guess. You were seated with House Mirandus, yes?"
Gritting her teeth, she nodded.
"Whoever arranged the tables must hate me." "The party planners don't hate anyone but my mother. She's not one for decorations or flowers or seating charts, and they think she's neglecting her queenly duties. Of course, that's nonsense,"
he added quickly. Another drink.
"She sits on more war councils than father and trains enough for the both of them."
Corianne remembered the queen in her uniform, a splendor of medals on her chest. "She's an impressive woman," she said, not knowing what else to say. Her mind flitted back to Alara Mirandus, glaring at the royals, disgusted by the queen's so-called surrender.
"Indeed."
His eyes roved, landing on her now empty glass.
"Care for the rest?"
he asked, and this time he truly was waiting for an answer. "I shouldn't," she said, putting the wine glass down on the bench. "In fact, I should go back inside. Jessamine, my cousin, will be furious with me as it is. I hope she doesn't lecture me all night." Overhead, the sky had deepened to black, and the clouds were rolling away, clearing the rain to reveal bright stars. The prince's bodily warmth, fed by his burner ability, created a pleasant pocket around them, one Corianne was loath to leave. She heaved a steady breath, drawing in one last gasp of the magnolia trees, and forced herself to her feet. Tiberius jumped up with her, still deliberate in his manners.
"Shall I accompany you?"
he asked, as any gentleman would. But Corianne read the reluctance in his eyes and waved him off. "No, I won't punish both of us." His eyes flashed at that.
"Speaking of punishment, if Alara whispers to you ever again, you show her the same courtesy."
How did you know it was her?" A storm cloud of emotions crossed his face, most of them unknown to Corianne, but she certainly recognized anger.
"She knows, as everyone else knows, that my father will call for Queen's trial soon. I don't doubt she's wriggled into every maiden's head to learn her enemies and her prey."
With almost vicious speed, he drank the last of the wine, emptying the bottle. But it was not empty for long. Something on his wrist sparked, a starburst of yellow and white. It ignited into flame inside the glass, burning the last drops of alcohol in its green cage.
"I'm told her technique is precise, almost perfect. You won't feel her if she doesn't want you to."
Corianne tasted bile at the back of her mouth. She focused on the flame in the bottle, if only to avoid Tiberius's gaze. As she watched, the heat cracked the glass, but it did not shatter. "Yes," she said hoarsely. "It feels like nothing."
"Well, you're a singer, aren't you?"
His voice was suddenly harsh as his flame, a sharp, sickly yellow behind green glass.
"Give her a taste of her own medicine."
"I couldn't possibly. I don't have the skill. And besides, there are laws. We don't use ability against our own, outside the proper channels." This time, his laugh was hollow.
"And is Alara Mirandus following that law? She hits you, you hit her back, Corianne. That's the way of my kingdom."
"It isn't your kingdom yet," she heard herself mutter. But Tiberius didn't mind. In fact, he grinned darkly.
"I suspected you had a spine, Corianne Jacobs. Somewhere in there."
No spine. Anger hissed inside her, but she could never give it voice.
He was the prince, the future king, and she was no one at all, a limp excuse for a silver daughter of a high house. Instead of standing up straight, as she wished to do, she bent into one more curtsy. "Your Highness," she said, dropping her eyes to his booted feet. He did not move, did not close the distance between them as a hero in her books would. Tiberius Calor stood back and let her go alone, returning to a den of wolves with no shield but her own heart. After some distance, she heard the bottle shatter, spitting glass across the magnolia trees. "A strange prince, an even stranger knight," she wrote later. "I don't know if I ever want to see him again, but he seemed lonely, too. Should we not be lonely together? At least Jessamine was too drunk to scold me for running off." Life at court was neither better nor worse than life on the estate. The governorship came with greater incomes, but not nearly enough to elevate House Jacos beyond much more than the basic amenities. Corianne still did not have her own maid, nor did she want one, though Jessamine continued to crow about needing help of her own. At least the Archaon townhouse was easier to maintain, rather than the Adirondack estate, now shuttered in the wake of the family's transplant to the capital. "I miss it, somehow," Corianne wrote. "The dust, the tangled gardens, the emptiness and the silence. So many corners that were my own, far from father and Jessamine and even Julian." Most of all, she mourned the loss of the garage and outbuildings. The family had not owned a working transport in years, let alone employed a driver, but the remnants remained. There was the hulking skeleton of the private transport, a six-seater, its engine transplanted to the floor like an organ. Busted water heaters, old furnaces cannibalized for parts, not to mention odds and ends from their long-gone gardening staff, littered the various sheds and holdings. "I leave behind unfinished puzzles, pieces never put back together. It feels wasteful, not of the objects, but myself. So much time spent stripping wire or counting screws. For what? For knowledge I will never use? Knowledge that is cursed, inferior, stupid to everyone else? What have I done with myself for 15 years, a great construct of nothing? I suppose I miss the old house because it was with me in my emptiness, in my silence. I thought I hated the estate, but I think I hate the capital more." Lord Jacos refused his son's request, of course. His heir would not go to Delphi to translate crumbling records and archive petty artifacts. "No point in it," he said, just as he saw no point in most of what Corianne did, and regularly voiced that opinion. Both children were gutted, feeling their escape snatched away. Even Jessamine noticed their downturn in emotion, though she said nothing to either. But Corianne knew their old cousin went easy on her in their first months at court, or rather, she was hard on the drink. For as much as Jessamine talked of Archaon and Somerton, she didn't seem to like either very much, if her gin consumption was any indication. More often than not, Corianne could slip away during Jessamine's daily nap. She walked the city many times in hopes of finding a place she enjoyed, somewhere to anchor her in the newly tossing sea of her life. She found no such place. Instead, she found a person. He asked her to call him Tybe after a few weeks, a family nickname used among the royals and a precious few friends. "All right, then," Corianne said, agreeing to his request. Saying "Your Highness" was getting to be a bit of a pain. They first met by chance, on the massive bridge that spanned the capital river, connecting both sides of Archaon. A marvelous structure of twisted steel and trussed iron, supporting three levels of roadway, plazas, and commercial squares. Corianne was not so dazzled by silk shops or the stylish eateries jutting out over the water, but more interested in the bridge itself, its construction. She tried to fathom how many tons of metal were beneath her feet, her mind a flurry of equations. At first, she didn't notice the sentinels walking toward her, nor the prince they followed.
He was clear-headed this time, without a bottle in hand, and she thought he would pass her by. Instead, he stopped at her side, his warmth a gentle ebb like the touch of a summer sun.
"Lady Jacos," he said,
following her gaze to the steel of the